Okay, we're just coming up on 7:30, so I think we can go ahead and get started. So I'm going to mute all. As usual, everybody has the ability to unmute themselves. Feel free to do so if you have a comment or question or remute yourself afterwards. And later on this evening, courtesy of Alan, the contents of the deck in PDF format, as well as the chat and the audio track, will go up on the website. And welcome all to any guests that we have with us tonight. We do welcome guests at any time at any of our meetings. If you do want to become a member, just go to our home page and click on the Join or Renew button at the top, and that'll take you through where you can pay by either Interac, PayPal, or snail mail with a check. And with that, we will. We got quite a few items on the agenda for tonight. So I'll turn it over to Alan to take us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thanks. thanks, Chris. I'm just trying to give you slide control. There we go.
There it is.
And I will kick off. As Chris says, we've got quite a few things. One of the things that's coming up is a poll. There's been a suggestion to have a presentation at one of the club meetings, a monthly meeting, on genealogy. Personally, I know nothing about genealogy, but this list of topics here has been provided. We have a person who can give any of these topics to us. So my question to everybody is, what topic would you wish to have presented? So later on in the evening, if Chris stops moving his mouse.
Oh, my apologies.
Later on in the evening, Chris is going to run a poll. And the choices will be those that you see right here. So ancestry, female ancestors, DNA, the frugal genealogist, technology impact, websites you may have been missing, finding, dating, and identifying old family photographs, better results with searches, assuring accuracy in research, and if you want to go on a road trip, how do you actually do the preparation? So those are the various choices we have. Pick one and let's see what people think. Okay, so that will be a bit later on. You can think about those options and we'll come back to that. In the meantime, I've got a few. I said that in the promo that Linus and I had issues with Windows, and it wasn't Linus Torvalds I was thinking of. It was Linus Sebastian of Linus Tech Tips. And it turns out he and a couple of colleagues have been running Linux distributions for a while. And this video is a summary of their experiences. And they look at the good things that happened and the bad things that happened. And then they finish off by saying whether they're actually going to drop Linux and go back to using Windows. And the title of the video here suggests that at least somebody thinks that they can't go back to Windows anymore. So if you have any interest in that, it's an interesting video. Another video that I came across just recently, this week in fact, is explaining computers, Chris Barnett. Windows 10, 4 months to go again. And if you remember, in October 2024, he gave a similar presentation on Windows end of life and then followed it up with what's going to happen later. And this is basically looking at the same problem if you haven't upgraded to Windows 11, if you're using Windows 10, you have some options on October the 13th this year as to what you might do, but if you can't upgrade to Windows 11, which I can't, then you have to make some choices. And the various choices are the same as you had a year ago, except that the extended support update program basically stops in October this year, which is why Windows 10 is really coming to its end of life. So you have to choose one of the following, and we've talked about this previously, so I won't dwell on the options. You know what they are, I think. One interesting one, of course, is switching to Linux, which is my preferred option. And it's kind of interesting, we were talking about Linux just before the session started. I like this comment, that if in 2026 you need to mess about in a terminal, giving terminal commands, or driver managers to set things up, and you really don't want to have to do that, then you've chosen the wrong distro. There are all kinds of distros around that will do the job out of the box, and you shouldn't have to do those netty things that, you know, like using terminals. If you're in that boat of not being able to upgrade to Windows 11, and you are interested in training up to Linux, then I remind you that I have a series which started in October 2024, a year before the end of life of Windows and the start of the ESU program, a mini-series on the Q&A sessions, which went through various things about Linux versus Windows. And by the same token, I had another series of articles for a year starting in October 2024 in the newsletter. So those are all available if you start at those URLs and then just follow on each month with the various parts of those series. And then I think the final video I have is this one from Dave's Garage, Dave Plummer. And we talked about him quite a lot, Microsoft engineer, retired. And if you've always thought that gambling, and especially slot machine gambling, was for people who were bad at mathematics, then this video is for you. He goes into great detail about how slot machines are basically computers in disguise. They make their decision in a nanosecond and then spend the rest of the time making some kind of display which is meant to encourage you to press the button again, basically. Anyway, it's a really interesting video. If you have any interest in that kind of stuff, I highly recommend you look at it. Okay, Chris, the next option is your keyboard shortcut for this week.
Okay, so, keyboard shortcut, we're up to number 13. So this is the ability to switch around between the running programs that you have on your computer. We often will have, several or dozens of running programs and how to switch easily between them. As everybody knows, you can always click on the taskbar icon down at the bottom of the screen. But again, we're trying to get away from using the mouse to do things, and we can do things with the keyboard instead. So in this case, it's the Alt-Tab. And if you hold down Alt and then you just tap the Tab key, it'll come up with a list of your running programs or windows of your thumbnails of your running programs. And each time you hit the Tab key, it will advance the highlight to the next one in the list. And then you can continuously tap it, or you can hold down Alt and hold down the Shift and Tab, and that'll move backwards through all your programs. And then you release the Alt key to select the currently highlighted program, or if you decide, oh, no, I really didn't want to switch programs, while still holding down the Alt key, if you just hit the Escape key, everything there disappears, and you're back with your original program. So there's another one, which is WinTab. So the Windows key and the Tab, they operate similarly, but a little bit different. So if you hold down the Win key and you tap the Tab, it'll bring up that larger thumbnails of all your running programs. At that point, you just release those keys. So, you release the Win and the Tab, and the thumbnails will stay up on screen. And then you can use the arrow keys to move around and highlight a different program that you actually see. And then you just hit the Enter key to select that program, or again, if you just want to get back to your original program, just hit the Escape key, and they'll disappear back off of the screen. And so that's it for that, but I believe the next one is mine as well.
Indeed it is.
It is. So public computers and public Wi-Fi. This was one I came across this video, and it's an article. I thought it was actually really, really good because I've often heard people say how it's so dangerous to use public Wi-Fi. And I've always disputed that it's not really dangerous. And you just have to understand a little bit about what's going on in order to assure yourself that it's not that dangerous. So if you're in that boat where you've heard all kinds of warnings about it being dangerous, then this article is a good one for you to read. So as the article says, many of those older warnings are outdated or exaggerated. And it really came down to the idea that you had unencrypted data that was flowing on the airwaves, and anybody who was on the same Wi-Fi hotspot could sniff that traffic. And if it was unencrypted, they would just have plain text as you type anything in, including usernames, passwords, and things like that. But the difference is that almost all websites and apps nowadays use encryption automatically, and you can't actually operate on the web pretty much now without an encrypted session. So for the longest time, I mean, you can't go to a Google property, whether it's Gmail, Google Search, or anything like that, without it being an encrypted session. It just automatically does it for you. And more of the major websites have switched over to that. And then modern devices are much better at protecting users than it was years ago. So a couple of things that are sort of highlighted in the article, how to stay safe on public computers. So that's where you're using somebody else's computer, which is a whole other ballpark. And then best practices to help stay safe online in public, on public computers or on public Wi-Fi. And then the question of, do you actually need a VPN? And I've often been in the boat that says, no, most people do not need a VPN. And they explain those edge cases where maybe you still do want to have a VPN, but I think it's a good article overall.
Tom's saying you may not be eavesdropped on, but your computer might be attacked locally.
But again, I think that computers are much better at protecting themselves anyways, and you do have to have the protections in place anyhow. So no matter what, if you're connected to the Internet, you better be protected from anybody who might be attacking you. And so, you know, I think that is, you know, really not an issue. If you're not protected, if you're counting on the fact that your Wi-Fi is, or you're avoiding Wi-Fi in order to protect your computer, then personally, I think that you're aiming at a different spot. You're not aiming at the right protection. So I personally don't worry overly about using public Wi-Fi. But again, if you're concerned, read the article. I think it's well done.
Okay. Thanks very much, Chris. Okay, next up we have a contribution from Steve Parker, a program called Easy Context Menu. This is a right-click type situation, and a utility program that Steve says he's been using for decades, in fact. And you can basically add useful commands to the right-click menu. You can add any programs that you want to run, and you can remove unwanted entries in these context menus. And he says that one option he just discovered that everybody might find useful is to copy the contents of a folder and into a list. So you right-click on the list of folders, I guess, and then pick a folder, and it will give you all of the files and subfolders inside that folder as a list in your clipboard, so you can just paste it into a note-taking application. Do you want to add anything to that, Steve?
Yeah, I discovered a whole slew of other programs that the developer of that one, that's Sortum.org, and they've got almost as many really good utilities as sysinternals. It's quite amazing. There's another one I was using that I've made pretty much a standard one now is Block Edge. It can actually stop Edge from trying to take over your PDF readers and insert itself here and there, and that WebView 2 nonsense that keeps going on. But the good thing about it is you can turn either both of them off or both of them on, or one off and the other one off and on, whichever one you want. Because Zoom has to have WebView 2 in order to work, which is what Edge uses. So if you turn off Edge and the WebView 2, then Zoom won't work. But you can just turn off Edge and leave the WebView 2 on so that you can get Zoom to work.
Yeah,
so it's a little, yeah, it's a little bit of a juggling act, but it works really well because then you don't have to worry about it doing something behind your back or taking up resources that you don't want it to, or being there when you don't really need it at all.
I highly recommend that you don't turn off WebView 2. There are a lot of programs that actually depend on WebView 2, and so you'll break a lot of programs, including things like Microsoft Quick Assist requires WebView 2. There's a lot of programs out there that actually need it.
That list of utilities might be really useful, though, Steve. Can you look up the URL and put it in the chat for us?
Yes.
It's on the chat right now. It's just www.sortum.org.
Yes.
So if you go to there, you should be able to get all of the other ones as well.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks very much, Steve. Okay, next up, Chris, is yours.
Okay. That's mine. So Windows on ARM. And I've been rather fascinated by Windows on ARM. So the old news about this is that ARM-based Windows laptops were introduced in just 2 years ago. And they use the Qualcomm Snapdragon X Plus or X Elite processors. So when you're buying a computer, if you go out and you look at the specs, and if they say it's using Qualcomm Snapdragon, it is an ARM-based laptop. And at the time, and I believe it's still the case, there are only laptops that are available with the Snapdragon processors on them. They are widely recognized on two significant things. Very good performance. Actually, three things. Very good performance, excellent battery life, and in actual fact, better stability than Windows on x86 processors. So widely recognized as being really good laptops. But the fly in the ointment is the problems with application compatibility. So for over 40 years now, Windows programs have run on x86 CPUs, so either Intel or AMD. And ARM is not x86 architecture. So the program authors have two options available to them. They can either recompile a program for the ARM architecture, which apparently is not always simple and straightforward, so a lot of them don't opt for that, or they can run it under emulation. And under emulation, there is reputed to be somewhat of a performance hit, but I've heard other arguments saying that the performance hit actually now is really, really minor. And more significantly, not all programs can run under emulation. So you still have a problem where you're going to have some programs that will not run if you happen to have something running on ARM-based processor. So that's the biggest problem that people are going to run into. Now, more and more of the programs, so the new news is that more and more programs are compiled now to run natively on ARM, but we're still not all the way there. So there are going to continue to be some programs that you want to run that they will not run on an ARM-based PC. Apparently, there's over 5,000, quote-unquote, popular apps that run on ARM, and there is a URL there that you can go to that you can see the list and also look up any particular program you want to see whether it runs natively or under emulation or not at all. There is a newer version of the Snapdragon processors that has been released, so the Snapdragon X2. I say here Elite, but somebody told me that they actually have the lower version of it as well as available, the Plus, so X2 Plus, but I didn't know about that one. So apparently it's quite an upgrade over the Snapdragon X or Elite or Plus, up to 18 cores, 5 gigahertz in speed. And these are, I think, Qualcomm's numbers, 30% faster CPU performance and less power drawn or better performance at the same power draw. Some of the laptops are actually already available that are using that. Microsoft actually just released a whole raft of Surface devices, some of which are on the Snapdragon X2 platform. So you'll see more and more of them coming out now. The new news is the NVIDIA RTX Spark processor. And it is ARM-based, and it is likely to outperform even the latest from Qualcomm, the X2 Elite. However, if you're interested in the ARM-based PCs, primarily for longer battery life, you'd probably be disappointed with RTX Spark. It will probably not be as good a battery life as the Qualcomm processors. However, it's probably still going to be better than x86 processors. So it's going to be available this fall. And so Microsoft has announced their Surface Laptop Ultra, which will be based on the RTX Spark. There's been announcements from ASUS, Dell, HP, Lenovo, and MSI. And Linus Tech Tips has got a good video on the RTX Spark if you're interested in looking up more information about that. Nobody's talking prices yet. It looks like these are going to be really expensive, like $3,000 laptops and things like that. But they are going to be very high performing. And, of course, coming from NVIDIA, it'll be RTX 5000 series or better on the graphics performance on it. So for gamers and things like that, they'll actually love it. So what will I buy? You know, my next PC, is it going to be ARM-based? Probably will be. So my next laptop will probably use ARM. It can't be my only computer because of compatibility issues right now. Main one for me is ARM1 Photo Raw, my photo processor of choice. It does not run on ARM as it currently stands. So my main computer, it is a pretty good, powerful desktop, and it runs everything I need. But my laptop computers don't need to run everything. I use them primarily for hauling around to give library presentations and take them on vacation and things like that. So mostly I need a browser and my office applications. And all of major browsers for well over a year have been running native ARM versions. And Microsoft Office and LibreOffice run natively on ARM as well, so that's fine. And the other critical app for me is Google Drive for Desktop, so that I can synchronize files between the cloud and all of my computers. And that runs natively on ARM as well. As I said, ARM Photo Raw used to talk about saying it ran on ARM, but there was some issues. Well, latest system requirement page doesn't even mention ARM at all, so I guess these some issues turned into be more significant than they originally thought. So, you know, do I need it on my laptop? Well, it's kind of nice when I'm on vacation that I can do photo editing, but I could take, you know, I do have another laptop that has ARM Photo Raw on it, so I could just use it for that. So I'm strongly suspecting that, you know, my next laptop will probably be ARM-based, and we'll see how it goes with that. And that's all I have on that.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Next up, I have a thing here on what I call Windows annoyances and headaches. I guess Chris would call it a rant. I don't rant about Windows, do I? And as you know, none of my computers will update to Windows 11, so I've been running the ESU Extended Support Update Program on my computers for the last 6 months or so, a bit more than 6 months, I guess. But recently, one of my machines, basically when I run Windows Update, which I don't do frequently, I run these things with a metered connection, so Update doesn't keep trying to update itself all the time. But when I do run Windows Update, I get this message that my device is missing important security and quality fixes. And it's a bit worse than that because there's an antivirus update there. That will be probably signature patches. And then the software removal tool is one of the things that runs every month, I think, on Patch Tuesday. I can set it to download and run those things, install them. But next time I go to Windows Update, I see exactly the same set of messages. I'm still missing security updates, and I still have these two outlying applications that I've just installed want to be installed again. So basically, Windows 10 updates is stuck. So I asked one of the chatbots, I think this is Perplexity, I forget, and I told it that it's stuck and it doesn't install this keyboard KB7602. And it tells me that it's a Microsoft Defender security update, and when it repeatedly fails, it's usually a problem with the update engine or the Windows Update cache. The update is supposedly good, but it's a problem with the system. So it tells me all kinds of things I should do. I should check if Defender's already updated. I can force Defender to update manually, which I did. I can reset Windows Update using a series of PowerShell-type commands. I can repair the Windows system files using System File Check and DIFM. I can check for third-party antivirus software, which I don't use. I can install the Defender updates manually by running one of these executable programs, which I can download. And if the error is intermittent, sometimes all you have to do is just wait and it goes away. So I tried all of the above, and of course, the next time I go to Windows Update, I see exactly the same set of error messages. So I go back to, so this time I've gone to Copilot. My thought here is that Microsoft must have trained Copilot on Microsoft material. So if anybody's going to know how to fix Windows Update, this problem, then it should be Microsoft Copilot. So it basically gives me some different things. Well, no, not really. It tells me the same things, basically. It wants me to run DISM to change the servicing stack. It wants me to reset the update database. There's that series of PowerShell commands again, or shell commands anyway. And then it wants me to repair the component store. It wants me to check for hidden updates, safeguard holes, they're called. It wants me to verify the update that I manually installed and make sure it actually did apply. Did all of those things, of course. And what you need to do next, and this is the fix. Well, good for them. I have to install the latest servicing stack update manually and then install the latest cumulative update. And it tells you why it got stuck. It was, or any of the following things could have had the problem. So I tried that, and of course I get the same thing. So I tell it, hold up. When I run update, it tells me you're not up to date. I'm missing these important updates. It gives me this malicious software removal tool, and I guess I don't have the Defender thing there at the moment. And it tells me that I've hit one of the more stubborn Windows 10 update loops. Isn't that nice? And if it's only giving me the software removal tool, then it usually means that Windows Update is stuck. Well, I think I told it that like 3 weeks ago that this was a problem. Anyway, here's the path that actually fixes this in most cases. Yeah, all right. It actually fixes it, but only in most cases. So, confirm whether updates are failing silently. No, it's just the two. Open a command prompt and run the shell commands. Well, we've done that several times, but we'll do it again. Run the troubleshooter. Yeah, the troubleshooter is great. There's a problem with Windows Update. You run the Windows Update troubleshooter, and the troubleshooter, guess what? Can't find a problem. Okay. Manually install the latest cumulative update. We've done that. Check my Windows version. Some older builds no longer receive updates. Right. I think that means if you're not running ESU, if you're running Windows 10 and it ran at end of life in October, then you wouldn't be getting patches. But if you're on the ESU program, then you should be getting patches. And as a last resort, run an in-place repair upgrade. Well, I'm not terribly keen on that. So what else can we do? Well, let's have a look at what else it says. Well, maybe it's the fact that this thing called Bits and MSI isn't running. So we should check whether some folders exist in the Windows software distribution folder in the C drive and catroot 2 in the System32 folder. If they're there, then delete them and try the rename option again. And then once you've done that, you reboot and good. All the services stopped cleanly. Here's the next step. Check whether the folders exist. I thought we just did that. Based on what you see, if they exist, delete them. If they don't exist, then you'll worry about it and reboot. All right, well, this is going round and round. So you've now done a full Windows Update component reset. You're not up to date. The cause is almost certainly not the removal tool, but we knew that a long time ago. The system is missing a cumulative update, and the update is failing to detect or install it manually. I think I've done this before, too. So let's go through the process, pick it out. So now it's found that the KV39211, which it suggested I should have, isn't the right one, so I should my build says it wants something else. And I'm ahead of a normal public Windows 10 update channel. And who knew you could do that? And the system received a preview or a pipeline update, or the metadata being desynchronized. And this is why Windows is confused and stuck. Thank goodness it knows that. But we can still fix it. And we can fix it by installing another cumulative update for the latest version of Windows 10. And of course, we'll do that, except that it didn't find any 37768 KV file. So if they don't get this one, you don't get that one, it means that you're not on the standard Windows 10 update channel anymore. Surprise! We're on the ESU program, people. Who knew we had to tell it that? So I think next time it will tell me. All right, this means that one of the following is true. Your system is receiving extended security updates. Yay, that's exactly what's happening. So that explains why you're not up to date and why it can't find the right KB files. So now we're going to switch to the correct fix for the ESU version of Windows 10. And what we're going to do is run an in-place repair upgrade. Yeah, I think it suggested that a long time ago. But it needs to know things. It needs to know if it's a home machine, refurbished, if it's something that's got ESU activated. Well, yeah, my computer is enrolled in the ESU program. And that explains everything now. Once you know it's in the ESU program, then the pattern that we've been looking at makes complete sense. It behaves differently because it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that. You'll see, you can produce the you're not up to date warning even when you're fully patched. Who knew you could possibly do that? But you can do all these various steps. You should check the ESU license status and all those good things. The problem is my computer's enrolled in the free version of the ESU program. There is no year one, year two nonsense. It's only good for the 12 months. Then when I tell it that, I'm on the free tier. I'm only getting the servicing stack updates. Well, that's okay. But I'm not getting the full month for security updates. Well, I would have thought I was getting security updates. But now here's the kicker. He said as he went one click too far. Here's the kicker. The free ESU tier does not satisfy Windows Update's security and quality fixes requirement. So it always reports you're not up to date and you're missing important security and quality fixes, even when the system is fully patched, and this is expected behavior. really weird because none of my other machines show that behavior, but still, so what can you fix? You can't make the warning disappear unless you buy the ESU program. I don't think you can do that for a home machine. I think that's only available for education and commercial offerings. I can ignore the warning. Yeah, that would do it. Or I could perform this in-place repair upgrade. So what's the actual status of my system? I've got the latest build. I've got the free tier active. Everything's up to date. Defender updates are working, even though one's stuck now and again. MSRIT, whatever that is, working. I don't have a paid entitlement. The not up to date warning is expected, and there's no corruption. My system isn't broken. It's just operating under the limitations of the free ESU tier. So I said, well, why does this message not appear on all my other computers that are running the free tier of ESU? Well, it turns out not all free tier ESU systems behave the same. So if your system is working fine, great. If you're seeing the same issue as this one, great, because that's the way it works, I guess. So what's the bottom line? What is the bottom line? The bottom line is it's behaving correctly. It's expected to do that. Nothing's broken. Everything's normal. Go away and don't bother me. So there you go. I find that quite incredible that Windows Update can break and Windows Update can't be fixed. I find it really incredible. They're telling me it's expected on the systems using the ESU program. And I find it really, really incredible that it only affects certain ESU systems. But that's what they tell me. And I check with several chatbots, and they all say the same thing. So it's not hallucinations here, or if it is, all the chatbots are hallucinating the same way. So that's all I have on that, Chris.
Actually, before you go on, can you jump back to slide 25?
Probably. 25.
Okay, yep. So they say here, open up a command prompt as an administrator and type in a bunch of commands one by one. I say if you do want to run this, and there's no problem with running this anytime really, put it into a script, so a batch file. The problem that I ran into, if you're running them one by one, you can see there's a bunch of net stops. So it's stopping certain services. And I found that by the time you type this in manually, some of those services have restarted on you. And that prevents the actual renaming of the software distribution and the catroot2 folders. So if you run it as a script, it runs fast enough that the services don't restart. So I highly recommend that if you want to do that, put it into a CMD file and run that, and you won't have that problem.
Okay. I think you can also just copy the whole shooting match and paste them into the window.
Yeah, that's true. I think that'll work no problem either. So, yeah. Okay, so we can jump up to slide 40.
There you go.
And
it's we are
now in time for the poll. So, again, I'll give people a few seconds to review the slide there. But basically what we're going to do is we're going to bring up this screen as an actual poll, and then I'll give you a minute or so to actually answer the poll. So let me just grab it and launch the poll. And so everybody can choose one of any of the ones that you see on the screen. And we've got a total of 43 people, and two of us can't vote because Alan and I, being host and co-host, are not allowed to vote in polls. So we have maximum 41 votes that can come in. We're up to 7, 8.
And you may have to drag the window or make it bigger to get all of the options.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. Well, there's a scroll bar in it as well, or it should be a scroll bar, I think. Yeah? I'm not sure. I don't see it, so.
No, I don't see the scroll bar.
Okay.
You can make it full screen, or you can just drag to a corner and make it bigger.
Okay, we're up to 17, so I'll give it a little bit more time.
We're going to throw you out to the Q&A session if you don't vote. No, not really, but...
Yeah, we're still having things coming in there, so wait until it's no votes for a couple of seconds before I end the poll. If we have time tonight, we will show you the results of the poll, but otherwise we'll show you next week.
3/4 of the people have voted so far.
Yeah.
So there's 25% people who don't give a damn.
It looks that way. So we've got 31, and it's been 31 for a few seconds, so I'm going to end the poll. And actually, I can share the results right now. So there's our results. So people can see how people are interested. So it looks like 2 are fairly high genealogy site ancestry, but the winner seems to be the genealogy websites you may have been missing. So again, as Alan mentioned, this is somebody at the APCUG who has offered to give the presentation as, actually, I didn't scroll down, so let me go down. Yeah, still looks like that's the winner. So it's somebody who has prepared presentations and is willing to give one. I did see an email come in related to this, the person saying that, one topic a week could be really good, but we're not going to get that because this is an external person who has offered to give a presentation. So I don't think they're interested in giving a dozen presentations. So I will stop the sharing of that. And thank you, Alan, for bringing that forward. And
thanks, everybody who voted.
And we will carry on.
Okay, so our next topic, our next several topics actually are from Stuart. So Stuart, do you want to talk to these?
I can try and say something.
Stuart on
relevant.
The spot.
Yeah.
I'll change the slides, you just tell me when.
Okay. I came across this application. Actually, it's a website called ADS-B Exchange, and if based on your location, it'll tell you what's overhead. Fine, that is not nothing spiritual. And it has a tremendous amount of information. If you click on one of the objects that you see on your screen, on the left side of your a whole list will pop up with information on the plane type, who owns it, where it's going, and a whole bunch of crap that I hadn't the faintest idea what it is, but if I knew more about planes, I could probably describe it. It even does helicopters and drones and not just commercial airliners. It's an amazing resource. I'm not using it a heck of a lot because where I live, we don't really get much of anything except seaplanes and police helicopters. So, you know, but there are still a few international jets that travel by in the stratosphere. What I'm really interested in is soon they will have a mobile app that you can put on your phone. So just like the apps for listening to birds and having the app identify them, you can point your phone at a plane in the sky overhead, and it'll tell you all the information that you'll get from the desktop version, they say. So, it's a very interesting resource for those that are interested in airplanes, airlines, and what are those other weird things that are in the sky. There's some more things on their website that they link to, too. There's one very interesting one was maps of GPS blockages around the world. And I found that they are generally around zones where there's major conflicts. So if you ever want to know where not to go on your vacation, check this out, see where the GPSs are blocked, and don't go there. That would probably save you a lot of headaches.
Like the Ukraine.
Well, that's parts of it. I hear other parts are very nice this time of year. So, that's about all I have to say about that. And now we have organic maps. This is a nice looking, basic mobile only map for your device, whatever device you happen to be mobile with. I couldn't find a desktop version. And it's, as is so many things these days, really focused on privacy and minimal intrusion from their part. There is no ads. They say no third-party tracking. Of course, they have location, because if you're using a map, you need a vague idea of where in the world you may happen to be. And you can import placemarks from other software mapping programs, so you don't have to start all over from scratch when you're building up any of your favorites in this. I haven't used it very much yet, but it looks nice and clean, and you know, I can't look at Google Maps anymore. As useful as it is, it's just like going through downtown New York or something on Times Square with all the advertising and notification. It's crazy. Organic map.
If this one's for hiking, does it have an option to give you contours?
Yes. Yes. And you download all the information you need if you're getting out of range of a cell signal. And yeah, there are contours in it. I didn't look for them because I use another map for that. But if you're off road a lot, this one may be worth checking out. Everybody's situation is different.
Okay, thank you. Next up is a crescent.
Oh, yes. A crescent is one of the places you can download organic maps from. Organic maps is on, of course, Google Maps and Google Play Store and the iOS store. And some of the other more obscure stores, but this is a new one that I'd never heard of before, and they claim to be very developer-friendly. And that may be as a result. I read the other day that there are literally thousands of vibe-coded apps being submitted to Apple's Play or Apple's App Store every minute. The vibe coding is just exploded around the world. And they're rejecting things like crazy. So if you get kicked or refused to have your app loaded onto Google or Apple Store or even any others, you may be able to get yours up and shared through a crescent. I'm not a developer, so I can't really say much more than that about it.
Okay, well, thank you very much. There's three things for people to check out. Thank you, Stuart.
Good luck, folks. I'm not responsible for what happens.
Chris, Dell Mouses.
Yeah. I'm a really big fan of Windows Hello for signing into Windows. Rather than typing in a password, just having it do it biometrically is really good. And so the most common method of doing Windows Hello is facial recognition with a webcam that is Windows Hello capable. Some laptops also have a fingerprint reader. And I've never used a computer with a fingerprint reader, but I would actually prefer that. The reason why is that if you have a Windows Hello capable webcam, and you lock the screen for whatever reason, and then maybe you get up and you go, and then you just sit down at the computer again, it'll unlock because the camera may be active, and as soon as it sees you, it unlocks your computer. Well, if you have privacy information or private information on your screen and somebody is there, it may reveal it to them. I like the idea of a very purposeful log into Windows, which would be a fingerprint reader. So it's not going to unlock unless I touch the reader. So I would actually prefer that. Well, it turns out that Dell has a $60 wired mouse, and it's the latest technology to enhance sign-in security fingerprint reader built into it, and you can see on the top of the mouse there's a little circle, and that's the fingerprint reader, so you just have to touch that. Now, it does, in order to use the enhanced sign-in security mode, it does require Windows 11 24H2 or better, but older versions of Windows, it'll still operate, but just in standard mode, which is still quite secure. And so if you're interested in adding on Windows Hello sign-in to your computer, there you go, for $60, so you can do it. And that's Canadian dollars at the Dell website.
Okay, thank you very much. So I think the final thing we have prepared, I think this is the final thing, is a note on scammers. And it turns out some of them are not quite as good as others. And this is my inbox on Thunderbird recently. And you'll see down the bottom there, I've highlighted a message which came in. And there's a number of clues that this is a scam. First of all, they want me to complete a PDF form, I think, with DocuSign. And I've seen messages trying to do this previously. They basically send you a PDF file that you have to open, and they want you to sign. Not only do they want you to sign it, but probably it's full of malware and will do bad things to your system. So DocuSign is the first one. The second thing is, I think this is some kind of proposal that they want me to sign, and it's from Brookfield Corporation. Well, I have no dealings whatsoever in this world with anybody called Brookfield Corporation, so. And I'm pretty convinced that this is being sent to me out of the blue. Something with DocuSign sent from somebody I don't know to do something I don't want to do. Those are all clues that this is a problem. And then, of course, you know me, I have to open it to see what's going on. And the next clue is when you open the message, there's a great big clue right there that this wasn't really intended.
Oh, sorry. I think I went and moved it. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that might be Korean. I don't know if it's Chinese or Japanese or Korean. Anyway, I don't read any of the above, so it's not me. So if you get any suspicious things, then be careful how you open them, don't open them, delete them, whatever. And I just remind everybody that we have a really good Fraud Watch page, courtesy of our hardworking webmaster, Bridget Lord. So if you go to the webpage on the URL there, lots of advice on how to deal with scams and how to identify scams and examples of scams and all kinds of great information and how to protect yourself from the bad guys out there. Okay, so I think we're in, for once in our lives, we're in the last 10 minutes, which is meant for any other questions. So are there any other questions, comments, shares, whatever?
I have stocks in Brookfield. It is a legitimate company. I don't know if somebody's got your email and trying to scam you, but it is a legitimate company. But that email is not legit. But they are a legitimate company. Brookfield Resources and Brookfield Apartment REITs.
Right. Yeah, I know the company. I just don't have any dealings with them. So.
Yeah. So that's weird. That is very strange. Yes.
I don't know whether I checked the from. Yeah, it's just that the from isn't coming from Brookfield Industries either.
It's coming from something else.
AriaIndustries.com, whoever they are. So there's another clue that it says it's from Brookfield Corporation, but it's not coming from their email address. So that's another clue that this is not a legitimate email message.
Okay, we do have a question from Barbara. Can fingerprint security be added to my iPhone 16? So I have no knowledge on iPhones, so if anybody else knows whether you can do fingerprint security on the iPhone, you could chime in. Mm-hmm. Natalie asks, does somebody have an answer?
Oh, I just bought an iPhone 16, and it's got the facial unlock.
Okay. So but you, no fingerprint?
Well, I
no
don't
fingerprint.
Think so.
No, know? And a fingerprint is safer than having it open as soon as it sees your face.
Yeah, so that's the same you, thing as I talked about. It's a, I want a deliberate act rather than it just automatically doing it.
If your screen goes blank, you have to tap the screen before the facial unlock will try to unlock the phone.
It doesn't have a fingerprint sensor.
No.
Okay.
No. It's crazy.
No, but
okay, thanks.
Good luck.
Okay. Natalie had a question. Is it possible to search the member forum for content? Yes, indeed. If you go to groups.google.com, you could access the member forum through a web browser, and there is a search bar there that you can put in any content you want, and it'll search the member forum for that.
Chris, is that in the signature or in the fluff that comes along with forum messages? I think it should be.
I don't know. It's been a long time since I looked at the footer. But, I believe it is. Yeah, you can access the messages through that. But as well, if you just go to groups.google.com, as long as you're signed into your browser using the same email address as your email is, then you can access them that way as well. I have a question from Glenn. How diligent and adept is Accrescent in screening for software with malware? Stu, do you have any idea on that one?
You muted, Stu.
Yeah. Sorry, I was tuned out.
Yeah, so how diligent and adept is Accrescent in screening for software and malware?
Oh, not a clue.
Okay. And Eldon passed on thanks for everybody that put together the pizza party last week. I was lucky with that. I did nothing of the work on that, so thanks to all who did the work.
Agreed. I did all that, too.
Yeah, I thank you. That was awesome.
And Tom pasted in the footer on the messages. So, yeah, there is in the footer, there is a link that will take you to that discussion on the web. So, and then once you're there, there is a search box so you can search the contents of the forum. And that's all I see in terms of questions and so forth at this point.
I have a face recognition story if you want one.
Sure.
So I was in the waiting room at a hospital where you had to mask, and there was a lady had her iPhone, and she had facial recognition, and of course with the mask on, it wouldn't recognize her when she couldn't take the mask off, but then she didn't remember her password, so she was locked out, so she had to go to the bathroom and slip her mask off so that she could get onto her. So just be aware that if your face changes, it won't work anymore.
That's not fun.
Well, don't grow a beard then.
Apple allows you to
try not to.
Or don't
Apple allows you to have two face IDs. So with the mask, it's allowed. It's the eyes.
Oh, okay.
So she can do two of them.
Yeah.
One with her face and one with a mask.
Cool.
And if you suddenly age a lot, you know, you can just re-register your face.
Yeah.
Take another picture then.
If you remember the password.
That's so fast.
That's
true,
yeah. Always know your passwords because it's a fallback when other technologies fail you for sure. Natalie has a thing saying she has an issue with Secure Boot. On her 3 of 4 certificates expire next week. So I presume, Natalie, you actually looked at the security center and it told you which certificates were set to expire. I assume if you saw that, yeah.
Yeah,
so I don't know that.
It was weird. It just says that they can't be automatically updated because either firmware or hardware call the manufacturers like, what? So I don't know. One expires the 24th, two on the 27th, one October. I'm not sure what is going on. It doesn't say specifically.
Hmm.
Well, you can always use question on. You can always ask a question on one of the AIs, but you'll probably have to end up calling Aster anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised on that one. Well, that's sort of a pain. I've checked all of my computers, and all my computers have up-to-date certificates on them.
Yeah, it says it's on, but it can't be updated.
Hmm.
Okay,
Okay, Alan, I think we're just on the 8:30, so we should do the wrap-up, I guess.
Okay, let's do that. Right, so first up, for members of the club, if you have problems that don't really lend themselves to Q&A or the members forum online, and we do have this program of one-on-one remote assistance where volunteers will remotely connect to your computer and try to help you resolve any problem that you have. And so the details are on the website there and the email to contact if you need that kind of assistance is also there. And I just remind you that this is only for club members.
And also keep in mind that it is most appropriate for if somebody can remotely connect to your computer. So if you have problems with your Wi-Fi card or your network interface or something like that, it may be just as productive to come to Q&A with the problem, because if people can't connect to your computer and see what's on the screen, then basically they're in the same boat as if it's a question that's thrown out at a Q&A, and we have more people on the Q&A call than we have in our volunteer list for the one-on-one remote assistance. So although we won't turn it away, if you have something where we can't connect to your computer, the likelihood of it being successful is probably less than if you just bring it to Q&A or ask on the forum as the other option for it.
So the other thing Chris mentioned there is that there are more people on the Q&A call than we have volunteers. So if anybody on the Q&A call wants to volunteer for the one-on-one remote assistance program, and send us an email, and Chris will be happy to sign you up. Okay, upcoming presentations at the library. I think these are all going. On Saturday at Nepean Center Point, Linda is going to be talking about restoring old photos. That's probably going to be the same presentation she gave at one of our monthly meetings recently, but if you haven't seen it or you know other people that would like to see it, Center Point on Saturday at 2 p.m., Chris is going to be in Cumberland on Saturday talking about artificial intelligence. And if you want to know how to keep your PC protected, then you need to go to the Stittsville branch on Sunday the 21st at 1 p.m. And Chris will tell you everything you need to know.
And thank you.
As usual, if you want to register for any of those, then you need to go to the URL there, which is the library's website. And you can register for any of those presentations. And you can also look at all the other presentations that Chris and Linda will be giving in the near future.
Great.
And the final thing I have is just a reminder for Q&A next week. Next week, the 24th, is a regular Q&A. So if you have questions, if you want to follow up on some of the things we've talked about tonight, if you've got topics that you'd like to share in these kind of mini presentations that Chris and I have given tonight, then just send us a few details to suggestionbox@opcug.ca, and we will be happy to add you to the agenda. So I hope everybody enjoyed the presentations tonight, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for showing up, folks.